Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our visit today with 94-year-old Wayne Bailey of Turlock, California, a Navy veteran of World War II. When we left off, the 17-year-old Minnesota native had been rushed through training and sent to Treasure Island in San Francisco.
They took us to the dock. Pretty soon they'd call off 8 or 9 names, and you go to that ship. The truck would go a little bit further, and they'd call off 4 or 5 names, and you go to that ship. It was real exciting. All of a sudden, I'm the only guy there on the truck. My heart was in my throat. They called my name and said, "This is your ship." And I'd never even seen a ship, naturally coming from the Midwest. And I thought that was the biggest thing I'd ever seen. They told me to go up the gangplank. Gangplank didn't mean anything to me. I didn't know what it was. And he says, "That's the ladder there. You go up the steps there." The ship is about 30 feet from the water level. So I load up this sea bag and all the gear and go up the, thank heavens I'd played football. Went up the gangplank, and I get up to the guard up there and told him I was reporting for duty. He said, "You ever been here before?" And I said, "No, sir." And I wasn't even an officer. It was just an enlisted man. He says, "You go down and just come back up again, and you do it right." I didn't know what he meant even. So I go down all those steps again, turn around, lug all that stuff back up. He just read me up one side and down the other. I won't use the language. The last I remember is, he says, "If you're ever going to be a sailor," he says, "you listen now." And he said, "There's a flag at the back of the ship." He says, "You're to salute that flag when you come up the steps, and then turn and salute me. Then you can enter." And that's what I did. And that was my first inauguration, getting on a ship. So that's what happened. I was a pretty lonely guy. So I reported, and they put me on the deck force. And after a few weeks of that, I knew that I was never going to be a deckhand. That wasn't cut for me.
And what kind of ship was it? What was the name of the ship?
USS Biloxi.
That's a light cruiser?
Light cruiser. Beautiful ship. And crowded. 1,200 men on that ship. And the quarters were tight. And I could really tell you some stories. But of how they treat when they get a green guy on. I was doing the same after I was considered assault. But it wasn't much fun.
Can you give us a taste of that, of what they had to do to break you in there?
First thing that I had never been used to as an individual anywhere was the heads or the bathrooms. And it was just a long trough with boards. Maybe you've seen such, that was my first thing that I'd ever come in. You're sitting shoulder to shoulder, and the fellow where the water comes down and runs in the trough, he knows when there's a green fellow on. First thing he did, and you probably remember, rolled up toilet paper, lit it on match. Everybody else knew, but not me. And I can remember doing it myself. So he puts it on the water, and the water goes down. And, of course, you're sitting there, and you know what happens. And that was quite an inauguration of coming into the ship, I'll tell you.
Is that where the expression comes from? Light a fire under his tail?
I guess that must be, I guess. Because that sure happened there many times. And I made up my mind that I was not going to be a deckhand, and I would take the first chance I get. And you got to understand, I didn't finish high school. But they did tell us that if your marks were good enough, and of course you had to have a C better or better average to play sports. You couldn't play sports. And so our marks were okay. And they told us when we enlisted that they would give us a diploma, which they did. In fact, I got it after I came to California. That's when.
Several years later.
Yeah.
Well, and I'm glad you brought that up, because I assumed that, but we probably haven't made that clear to the audience, that when you 5 guys were on the football field saying, "Hey, let's go into the Navy," you knew you weren't going to be finishing high school.
Right. But after I got home, I had made close friends with a Jewish boy from New York. You got to remember, we're on a southern ship, and very few northerners on there, and we were treated pretty rough at times.
Like they call you names and stuff?
Oh, yes. Always. Once in a while, it'd be a scrap. But I knew I was not going to be happy in being a deckhand, because they were, it was just a different, whole different group of individuals, just a rougher group, it's all. And it takes that type to do that type of work. And so the first chance I had was when we had a little paper that came out weekly. On it, it said that they were looking for a yeoman striker in what I read as the chaplain's office. I thought, boy, there's an opening. I'm going to go and see it. Because you have to wait for an opening. You just can't go up with the ranks. You have to wait till there's an opening to do it. And I'm just a second-class seaman. So I take time, and I go to the chaplain's office. And I ask the chaplain, I said, I'm here to apply for your yeoman position. He said, no. He says, I'm not looking for any yeoman. I said, well, that was in the paper. No, he says, that's captain's yeoman. Oh, I said, and I said, well, I'm not interested in that, because I didn't think I could even come close with not even a high school education. So I said, no, I'm not interested then. I said, well, he says, you're going with me. He says, I'm taking you up there. He says, you come here and applied. I'm sure your thoughts are that you want to be a yeoman. I said, well, I didn't care whether it's a yeoman or not. I said, I just don't care about the deck force. Mm-hmm. He says, I understand. That's all he said, is I understand. So he drags me up to this captain's office, and I had to get in line. There was probably six or eight. I can hear the fellow behind me. His name was Bodie. He said, Bailey, what are you doing here? I said, I didn't want to be here, but I said, they brought me up here. So I said, I've got a report here so I can tell them where I've been from the deck force. So he says, what's your education? I hadn't finished high school. Well, I'm a college graduate. He says, I don't know what you're doing here. And I said, well, I don't either. So I said, that makes us two alike. And we go in, and they interview each one. And when they come to me, I went in, and I was verbal interviewed for a little bit. And thank heavens I'd taken a business course, and I'd taken typing. They'd put me down to type, and they give you a form, and had a bunch of little squares and lines, and you were supposed to put certain words in the lines and X's in the squares and everything. Well, the first thing I did wrong was put the carbon paper in backwards. And because I'm nervous, and of course I didn't hit hardly any squares, and the lines went up and down a little bit, but I was pleased. I thought, well, I won't ever be called. So they let me go, and I went back to the deck force, and nothing happened, and went on for almost 2 weeks, I recall. I was working in the warehouse of the ship where we had stored all the canned goods and stuff. I was clear up at the top of them, and the bosun mate came in there, and he wasn't too happy, and he yelled at me, and he said, Bailey, he says, you got to report to the captain's office. And I thought, man, I wonder what now. And he got me down there and off the pile of stuff, and I went up there, and they told me I had the job if I was willing to take it. And I said I sure would, because I wasn't going to get off that deck force. And I couldn't believe that I got it. So, but I did, and that was where I went up the line. I got up to third-class yeoman and third-class petty officer. And I'd done the Dewey Decimal filing system in business, and so they had me do the filing of the restricted, confidential, and that type of everything but secret. I was in charge of the file, and it was locked, of course, and only opened when the captain wanted it. And that was it. And then from then on, I had to type and do all the clerical work that was done in the ship there in the office. Processed all the officers, anybody that was being transferred or anything. We handled all that. And like I said, there's no hero in me or anything.
And where did you guys go? So you left San Francisco. Where'd you go?
They announced it over the PA system. We got a big kick out of that. I think we were making $29 or 31 or some dollars a month. And when you cross the line into the fighting area, you get a 10% raise. So we laughed because you get $3 more to get shot at. That was what they all said all the time.
Yeah.
Every time you crossed that line, and you did, you got 10% more. But as soon as you come back to the States to load ammunition and food, you lost the 10% right away too. So they didn't overdo it. The first thing that we did was just to practice on the guns was on the island of Guam. We had a captain that was... He was a great man, don't misunderstand me. But he would go in against the rough areas, and he wanted to practice, or he wanted to check all the guns again. So he says, we're going to wait until the Japanese go. He says, we know where there's a dining room. We're going to wait till they all go there. And he announced this over the PA system, and that's what we did. We blew up the dining hall, and that was my first thought of killing somebody. Mm. And from there, then we went over in the Philippines and Okinawa and South China Sea, Guadalcanal area and all that type of stuff, and unloaded onto the beaches. But Wake Island was a tough one. We went in against 8-inch guns, and we only had 6-inch on the ship, and the captain wanted to know if we'd give him the authority to go in under the range of the 8-inch guns and take out emplacements. Now, I'm sure you're familiar with the cruiser. It carries 3 planes, pontoon planes.
Mm-hmm.
So our planes would go up and look for the encasements and whatnot of the big guns, and they would set down approximate the distance and so forth. And then the ones setting sights on the big guns, that's what we would use. And you got to remember, we're in range with, we had to get in with a 6-inch gun, and there with an 8-inch. And we did. We took one underneath the ship, and it really, I thought that was it.
And where were you, what was your duty station when General Quarters sounded?
Of all places, powder room.
Ooh.
You're at the very bottom of the ship, and they always dog you down because it's better to lose 6 men than to lose half of 1,200.
I know what you mean when you say dog you down, but explain for people who aren't familiar with that terminology. When they dog you down, you're not getting out of there.
No, you lock the doors. They lock the doors and shut off the air. There's air circulation, but nothing, there's no fans or anything going, and it's hot.
They want to contain the damage if something goes wrong.
Right, so it doesn't go through the ventilation system.
Which for you means you know it's all or nothing.
Right, and it's hot, and we're stripped down to our shorts.
And you're, by this time, 18 years old.
Yeah, just 18.
And so what did you have to do in the powder room?
In the powder room, we're down where the casings are. We're at the very bottom of the ship. They're in the casing. And we called it the lifter. It's an elevator-type thing. And you've got to keep them going. They're in a case, in a casing. You have to take, the one man takes the casing off, tips it towards you if you're by the lift, and you catch it in your arm like this, and you turn and lay it onto the lift, and you got to do it so fast, depending on what the turret is doing. In our case, on Wake Island, it was all emplacements that they were trying to soften for the Marines, the beach. So we weren't using any shrapnel type, because in the turret up above, they have projectiles that are set with timers, and they're like you would, if you're having an air attack, and there's a lot of them up there, fighters, that we, a lot of times we used the big guns and would blow them up into the air, and then the timer would explode it up there, and the shrapnel would damage the planes and whatnot. It'd take in a bigger area. You're probably familiar with that all.
Sure.
So, but here it was just the emplacements and whatnot. One of their projectiles went off underneath our ship, and it raised it right up out of the water, and we thought we were hit good, but...
Because you're, as you said, at the bottom of the ship,
yeah,
so you felt that more than most.
Oh, and it raised the ship even. It was unbelievable.
But you know, if that was a hit, and if the ship goes down, you're not getting out.
No. You know that every time you go in, so...
How do you prepare yourself for that?
The first time or two, you don't. Afterwards, you take communion and hope for the best. And I was lucky. That's all.
That sounds pretty tiring, too, when you're passing shell after shell after shell in those hot conditions.
We were there, it was under 3 days, and they bring our sandwich to us, and usually a pickle or a slice of lemon, in case you're seasick or something. And you had nothing but a bucket to use for a toilet, because you're in there to stay.
It's break time again. We're getting a little taste of what Wayne Bailey experienced as a teenage sailor in World War II, but there's much more to come, including kamikazes, typhoons, prisoners of war, and the aftermath of an atomic bomb. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.